Hi, I'm Samiran.
Hi, I'm Nilesh.
Hi, I'm Sheetal. And you're listening to 3TB.
Three Techies Banter. So, what's kept me busy last week? I'm not sure you want to know, but I'm going to tell you anyway. So, I was busy trying to generate the image of a single banana on Midjourney. Apparently, AIs don't see the world like we do. So, they think of bananas as banana-ness, you know, just the thought of being a banana. So, every time you try to generate one, you get a bunch of bananas. And so, you know, it's like expecting my dog to understand quantum physics, which is kind of adorable, but unrealistic. I think maybe my dog does understand quantum physics, but that's another story. This is so well known that even Sarah Ali Khan had a joke about this. And she's, and for our Hindi-speaking audience, she actually said, why do bananas actually move around in bunches? And the answer, Sheetal, is?
Otherwise, it's a Kela.
So, anyway, apparently they move around in bunches. But after version 6 of Midjourney, we are getting single bananas. But not to be outdone, I have now moved on to grapes. So I'm trying to generate a single grape now, which is not happening. So I will keep you informed about how that's going.
Samiran, you know, you've spoken about this on your LinkedIn, and somebody has written to you saying that that seems to be a Midjourney problem because that's not a problem on DALL-E. Maybe you should do the single grape on DALL-E.
No, it doesn't work. No, I've tried that. So, but you know, you actually, those bananas get generated in the shadow and all that, so you probably can't see it. Anyway, so we are also gathered here to bid bon voyage to our friend Nilesh, who's going to be traveling to CES in Vegas. And in an unconnected coincidence, it also overlaps with the AVN Awards. For the unaware or the rest who are pretending to be unaware, these are the annual adult movie awards, which used to be part of CES till the 1990s. But now they are separated. So they're on different days, different times. But
yeah, no luck there, Samiran. I'm only attending CES.
No, I actually, Nilesh, went and checked the dates also. So it's like this ends on 12th and that's going to start on 25th or something. So yeah, but apparently the reason they are separated is that they found a lot of CES people coming to AVN and creating a nuisance. So there you go. Anyway, but moving on to the topic for the day, and that is about India and how India is standing in the world of AI. Like everything else, we have a long history of AI. And when we say long history, I mean long history. You know, it's like Amish Tripathi type history. It's like really long. So I kind of just went and read up some stuff here. And it seems that there is a school of thought that believes that Kumbhakarna was actually a robot. So he apparently was an automated robot, which was kind of driven by someone who was called Kumbhakarna and what have you. But closer to kind of just maybe 1,000 years back, there was actually a robot called Babarek, who was dug up somewhere in Rajasthan. And history, mythology says that this character was present in the army of Lord Krishna. I mean, you can go read this up and I can kind of get into some detail, but that will kind of take away from all the other interesting stuff we have to say. This structure, you know, it was metallic, robotic, and it had funny eyes and all. And it's kind of a matter of history. So it's very difficult to draw a straight line between mythology, AI, and current day. But suffice to say that somebody there was thinking this, at least in science fiction terms. Even in India, while we were, you know, post-independence, we took some time to kick off. But I think IIT Kanpur took a lead. They started building expert knowledge systems. And there are a couple of people. I think there was a gentleman called Professor Mahabala who kind of took the lead. And he's kind of considered to be one of the founding fathers of AI in India. Just like AI Winters, obviously, we took some time and we went through ups and downs. And lo and behold, we are here today where it's got a huge impetus riding on the back of all the other great stuff that we have done in digital public infrastructure, more literacy, more skilling. And, you know, I think India's time in AI has come. And I think I will now let Sheetal and Nilesh jump in and bring some sanity into this conversation.
So let me give some numbers. So IBM did a global AI adoption index, you know, a survey across countries, across professionals. And India stands at 57% rate of adoption of AI And just to give you a benchmark, international average is at 25% and US is at 34%. So India is moving very fast in, you know, the rate of adoption and even in terms of the whole ecosystem development. So we'll talk about it a bit. 66% of surveyed professionals indicated that their company was incorporating AI in some shape or the other. So we are up there when it comes to AI adoption. India's Gen AI market, just India, right? Just nothing to do with the global numbers, will surpass $17 billion by 2030 at a CAGR of 48%. It's like the same story, right? The consumption itself will increase, but we are also on the supply side, we are giving birth to multiple AI startups. So there are some 70 Gen AI startups, and this is just Gen AI, I'm not even talking of the other aspects of AI in India. And the total money raised was $440 million in last couple of years. That's a huge number, you know, just on AI. And more than 80 Indian institutional investors are backing these startups. So the Indian Gen AI scene is fair and square in the global spotlight. And just to add to all those numbers, you know, the Ministry of Electronics and Information Technology has set up this whole umbrella initiative. I'm sure many of the listeners have already seen it. This initiative is called India AI. There's a whole portal dedicated to this India AI. And some fantastic kind of research work is happening under the aegis of the government. So not just the ancient times, I think the winter is over. We are back in the spotlight.
No, and Nilesh, good you mentioned this. So in fact, this is of course just the formal work, but there is this very lovely AI for all self-learning online program that the government has launched. It's for just public awareness for everybody who's in the field of AI. It could be your stay-at-home mom, senior citizen. It's got this two features called AI Aware and AI Appreciate. And it's a very, very easy way to just understand what AI is about. So I think while we are doing a lot of work in the formal sector, I think there is a general effort to uplift everyone and bring them, you know, a level higher.
So what's interesting, Nilesh, on the back of what you're saying, right? So there is a certain willingness of this government to partner with organizations for AI. So that's one big thing. And I think they're willing to partner on all things digital, AI being one of the biggest, right? But what is interesting is also the fact that it's not just about Gen AI. And I think that's what I found interesting. I was reading an article written by Nandan Nilekani and Tarun Bhojwani. And it's fascinating because they're saying that one of the big differences, right, that will happen in India is that India needs AI, whether we like it or not. That's one of the biggest things, right? We need it. We need it simply because, and what they mention is that AI in India will not just be about developing cutting-edge technology. It is really about finding innovative solutions to pressing problems, right? And who better to speak about this than Mr. Nilekani, given the fact that, you know, the whole Aadhaar, Base, UPI, etc. is guided by him and developed by the team. So it's very interesting because he says we're not going to be just about Gen AI, right? We are going to be beyond that. We are going to be a country which will talk about the problems of the people. So we are the country which will put problems of the people first. So it's identifying the right problems of the people and then finding AI to give you solutions, which may be Gen AI or otherwise, which I think is very interesting because we've already started doing that. So we've solved UPI has solved finance issues at scale, right? But we have so many other issues that we have to solve at scale. We have the paradoxes, right? For example, our education system and our healthcare system and our agriculture system, all of them need solutions at large. And solutions at large, which come both from the key game. So we have resources, but the problem is the fact that the resources are not distributed evenly. And therefore, AI will help us bring and play a key role in the game of distribution is what they're talking about. And I thought that was fascinating.
You know, I totally agree with that, that India will put people first and we'll be solving some very, very interesting problems. Given the fact, I mean, it's not just about the scale. I always feel India is more like a continent than a country, right? So think about the number of languages and the scripts that we have. I mean, we really need AI. I mean, when you go from north to south, it's like a completely different language, culture, everything changes, or east to west. So I think whatever India does, we can think of it like a continent and multiple countries within that continent trying to solve a single problem, right? So rather, when you look at let's say countries in Europe, they'll be solving just their own country's problems. But what comes out of India probably already will be ready for global kind of scale, both in terms of complexity and scale itself.
Right? So in fact, they are, like you talked about this whole diversity, right? I think, like, even Nandan always says that, you know, that we are not developing AI because we like AI. We are developing because we are always trying to solve a problem, which is how we've done everything else. So even this language thing, right? So I remember this when Satya Nadella was down in India, maybe in the beginning of 23 or maybe 22 or so, there was this whole app called Jugalbandi where they show farmers of different parts of the country talking to each other, which they then took forward and developed this whole platform called Bhashini, which is, you can kind of, it's actually available in all 22 constitutional languages, and it allows anybody to speak and anybody to understand. The reason I'm kind of saying that is now it's reached a point where the Prime Minister used it in a Tamil Sangam conference to address people who only understood Tamil. Okay, so he spoke in Hindi, they understood it in Tamil, and if they were asking him something, he understood it in Hindi. So, you know, one of the big challenges we have in this country, which is diversity and inability to understand each other, looks like it might get solved in the next X number of years, because as this thing scales, it's going to kind of be fantastic. And the beauty of this is that the training is crowdsourced. So, you know, you have Dekho India, Suno India. So you can say a few sentences and train the model. You can understand some of what anybody else is and train it. So it's beautifully done. But yeah, so to the point of diversity, that they're using AI to kind of bridge that also.
And just imagine, you know, it's not that such solutions were never thought of or developed, but they were happening in silos. And like you correctly mentioned, Samiran, they didn't have the scale, the ability to train, understand and deploy these models. So whatever gets done under the aegis of India AI will already be global ready. I mean, Google Pixel was talking of exactly what you mentioned about PM Modi, right? They with the Pixel Bud and the phone, you can actually converse in foreign language.
True.
But they were always talking of Spanish, English. It was limited to some global. Now you suddenly have 22 languages and the complexities. And if you solve that, you're done. You're absolutely done.
It's amazing, actually.
So it's quite funny because we all agree India needs it. But what's also interesting is we are also ready for it, in the sense that there's willingness from the government and there is investments from the government. B, I think we also have people. Yes, there is an issue that the next generation needs to be trained on AI. And Samiran, you're right that there are portals now being made available where the next set of students or, you know, even housewives can get into understanding AI and how to use it, etc. But there is availability of tech talent in this country, correct? Which earlier was getting exported, but today is getting retained and is being used. And I think the third is our data infrastructure and our tech infrastructure is in place. So if you put these three things together, we've kind of made sure we are right there where we can jump and take in the numbers. And Nilesh, just to add to your numbers, the market size for AI and, you know, stuff like that in 2022 was 680 odd million, and it's expected to grow to 4 billion right by 2028, which is a 5.7x increase, and that kind of tells us, yes, it's very small compared to the US, which is a couple of, I don't know, maybe 100 billion or something like that. But the fact that we will suddenly become large and suddenly you will say, oh, we didn't even think that these things could be solved is what I think is going to be the differentiator of India on the AI map globally.
So, in fact, we don't even realize a lot of the things that we already use AI for. You know, stuff like Zomato and Flipkart are already using it for shopping experience. You know, we have vernacular AI assistants now in a lot of the apps. I think people like Vedantu, Baiju are using it. The government is using it. And what is not classified as AI, spam filters, spam filters is actually, and it's a computational statistical tool. So there's tons of stuff that we are actually already using. And now we have got used to success and the possibility of success. You know, you need to have wins, right? So now, maybe at that point, maybe Manmohan Singh and Lilakali and five other people thought that Aadhaar was possible. But now you have many more people thinking that, if I take this up at scale, I can solve this for a billion people. I mean, maybe I can solve waste management for a billion people. I can solve traffic congestion for the whole country or whatever it is. So I think that is also fueling this. And maybe we have some advantage of hindsight and other people's work. And, we take a more balanced view. But I think the fact that it's become policy driven and, we can talk about all those six pillars or whatever a little more. But I think there is a method to the madness, this as opposed to just AI developing wild, which is also a good thing in many ways. But
So I think taking the cue from, the six pillars, I was just going to talk about it also in the light of what Sheetal mentioned, that, you need to upskill the next generation. So what I found very interesting was that India AI, this umbrella initiative, has six pillars and they have been very wisely chosen pillars, right? So it's like India with and governance, AI in governance, AI in compute, that's second. Then there is data. It's a very important one. There is a specific initiative on innovation. Then you have skilling and finally ethics. Right. I think we in our first episode of AI or second one, we talked of ethics and AI. So I think this whole initiative has been very well structured, honestly. And it has, the stalwarts of industry kind of participating. It's interesting times.
So maybe what we should do is in the next segment. Let's take these six pillars, and I know all of us are super excited as usual when we do all of the talking and the researching that we do about various startups in the AI space, who have kind of caught our attention. And it's quite funny for all our listeners. Let me tell you that 90% of the times, and I don't know how we manage to do this, we never have overlaps. So each one of us has found some 5 to 7 startups and none of our startups overlap. So I don't know what we do in our searches, but we've landed up with so many startups which excited us. So in the next segment, maybe we should take some of these, some of these pillars and some of the startups and talk about those. What do you think?
So obviously, because AI is such a flavor of the month and there are such obvious advantages of AI for all countries, everyone wants a piece of that pie. But what is also resulting out of this is something that people are calling AI nationalism, which means that every country is building and developing their own initiatives, whether it be Abu Dhabi, France, the US, China, India. All of them are announcing initiatives, which is kind of a good thing. But I mean, we just need to look at it from the lens of, opportunities. It's good for innovation. Everybody's developing something. We have cultural differences coming into AI. But the challenges are that it's causing a huge amount of fragmentation of global research. There are regulatory divergences because, an AI built in Abu Dhabi may not be accepted in France and what have you. And sometimes it feels like a race to the bottom because, you know, everyone's kind of spending the same huge dollars developing the same kind of stuff. So, you know, it kind of literally makes me think that we probably need a United Nations for AI now, though the United Nations is probably not the best example of international regulation anymore. But just given India's size and the complexity, probably the approach we are taking is the right one in that, you know, we have a policy to which we are kind of marching. It's got compute, it's got ethics, it's got security and all of that. And I think that is giving rise to some very, very interesting startups in diverse areas, fulfilling very, very different use cases, but all geared to obviously fulfilling a need of the Indian citizen first, which hopefully can be scaled globally.
So, Samiran, you want to talk about one or two of the startups that you think you're very, very excited about?
Yeah, so I think the ones I kind of that really caught my eye was, of course, there's this one called Open Hathi. You know, so Open Hathi is actually in the world's obviously first Hindi LLM. So no, everything is being developed in English, but Open Hathi is actually developed in Hindi, and it's the same people who kind of did the building blocks for Bhashini earlier. So it's the Pratyush Kumar and that team. You know, they are the same ones building this. Then there are a whole bunch of others which are very, very generic in nature. So I think the Bhavesh Agarwal is building his own AI LLM tool. It's called Krutim.ai. So it's a chatbot which is kind of going to compete with global chatbots with an India flavor. There is something called Bharat GPT. That there is, of course, there is Bhashini, and there's a whole ton of others. But these are like more generic and foundational, where other people will kind of feed off this. But I'm sure, you know, you've kind of come across more pointed and more interesting ones too.
I think when you spoke of, you know, the nationalism and AI aspect of it, why I like the approach India has taken is that when I look at many of the initiatives, including the whole stack that we created, most of our government-backed initiatives are open source. So honestly speaking, I mean, you saw our friend Arvind Gupta posted something about ONDC in NY.
Just the scale of transactions is crazy,
right? So and when you look at, you know, when we spoke with the Indian ambassador in Ireland, talking about UPI being, you know, one of the ways for international collaboration and you know, governance. So I think the whole idea that it is open source and we are already doing it at scale, I think will go across the country boundaries, hopefully. So one, I have to start with one particular app coming out of this whole, you know, the government and initiatives, which is Digital Sansad. I don't know. I read about it very recently and I was like, wow, this is something next level, right? So our new parliament building is kind of completely equipped for this Digital Sansad. And Digital Sansad essentially is real-time transcription of all the parliamentary proceedings. This is one part of it, by the way. And just imagine India's parliament is way more complex in terms of languages and, you know, nuances and the way even Hindi is spoken. Let's say if Hindi was spoken most of the time, that the transcription is going to be a nightmare. And I have to personally check it out because transcription has come of age and all three of us have used various different services. But transcribing parliamentary proceedings in India, and if it is done really well, I think that will be the best transcription tool available on the globe, right? So that is Digital Sansad. It seems it gives ministers a lot of, you know, access levels and it has the whole proceedings of the parliament, the work of the parliament and how ministers interact with it has been made very easy and digitalized. And kind of, as I said, it is being woven into the new parliament building. So it's like a very cohesive ecosystem being created, Digital Sansad. I have to check it out, honestly. I have not seen it. I don't know whether any of you have seen it.
I read about it, but just obviously not seen it in action. And in fact, Nish, that you mentioned UPI. So I always believe that anything really is very good and popular if people start making jokes about it. So on UPI, there was actually something that somebody actually wrote a piece, and then for a moment I believed it. He said that UPI has kind of spelled the end of the toffee industry. And I said, wow, what's that? They said, because what used to happen earlier is that, you know, you never had change, right? So you used to go and pay, and shopkeepers used to give toffees in exchange. But now, because you can give exact change, there's no concept of it. They said, no, how the industry is dying, you know. It wasn't true. I mean, I kind of checked it because somebody had written a rebuttal. But there were 2-3 articles. I said, wow, is it possible the toffee industry is ending because of UPI?
But I do miss those toffees because that was the only time you actually got the toffees to eat them, right?
And there was an excuse to get it, right? It's, I can't help it. You know, I didn't get change.
And it happened every time you did a long distance thing at the toll naka, where now your pass is what ruins the joy of getting the toffee and returning the toffee and trying to return the toffee as exchange. That used to be. So for me, I think I actually saw quite a few startups, which coming from the non-tech space, any which ways makes my head spin. But one of them, which really caught my attention, was a company called Karya. And I actually, that caught my attention simply because they're doing some amazing stuff in the ethical ways of data collection, right? And which I think is so ahead. Typically, you know, when you get into a space, you worry about the ethical part of it much later, right? Everything else happens. Everybody's in it for profit and for money. And let me sell my company to the largest, whatever, whatever. So a lot of startups would have been in that space. But this one in specific, I thought was quite fascinating for me. So that's why this one caught my attention. And it's called Karya. And what they are doing is some very interesting stuff. And I don't know much, and I would love to get to know more about them. But what they're doing is they're capturing, labeling, and creating data with accuracy. And the interesting thing is that they're doing this for companies which use data to develop, because AI needs information, right? So they are collecting information to train AI models. And I thought that was fantastic. And they've created a marketplace. And it's a non-profit organization. So they have some 30,000 odd workers, and they're all from rural India, people who usually don't get jobs and employment and things like that. So they're taking digital into rural India and empowering people in rural India to work with them and create data sets. And the other thing that I found very interesting is that the data sets are owned by the people. They're not owned by the organizations. And therefore, they keep getting money on the data sets as they get used more and more, which to my mind was very, very fascinating. And they have some very interesting promises and codes that they operate with, right? And so it really has nice principles. And I thought one of them, which I really like, and I know a lot of people may think, oh, only that much, but it is quite fascinating, is they talk about prioritizing maximum worker wages, and they currently pay their workers $5 per hour of their work, right? Now, if you think about it, $5 is just 400 rupees, and that's way below whatever. But think about it as rural India, where, you know, employment per se is an issue. People are below poverty line. 400 rupees can go a long, long way for a per hour wage. And so I thought a special call out to Karya was important in this episode. It was super, super exciting. I read about a lot more, like I read about Minus Zero, which is the autonomous vehicle thing in India, etc. Very interesting startups, but I think a special call out for Karya for me was the most important one.
When I was reading this report on India AI, and a lot of numbers came from that report, one of the things quoted in the report was that India is doing a lot of work in the area of coding, right? So no code, low code kind of platforms. One of the startups I saw coming out of India was CodeMate, I think Bangalore-based startup, if I'm not mistaken. This one is, I think, Delhi NCR. And it is an AI programming assistant. And essentially, it says that, you know, your coding will be, you know, 10x more enhanced, error-free and all. Another interesting thing I read, you know, what I liked, and we have spoken about it, right? So if there was a race between a human AI and a human with AI, a human with AI will win. So CodeMate is not saying that it is like a no code kind of thing. It is actually a productivity enhancer whereby it sits within your development environment. So it's not like you have to learn something, and it helps you code faster. The other couple of Gen AI tools, and I didn't know they were, one of them was Indian actually, and Samiran spoke about it, was Beethoven. So Beethoven is again Bangalore-based startup which does, you know, generation of royalty-free music and gives a lot of controls to the users to change the cadence, scale, and create music out of existing pieces. So AI-generated music. And one more I have to talk about very briefly. I mean, it's not a call out or something. Is dubdub.ai, and why I felt I thought I should talk about it is, if you remember, we did a lot of things with Vitra, right? And yes. Sheetal, you were mentioning that Vitra has some is backed and Google funded now. So dubdub is doing something similar. By the way, they generate video material in several languages. I'm sure Vitra is doing it's a more mature kind of startup, but dubdub, it seems it's a dubbing platform. So you have your video and it can, generate that video material and translate and generate a video in several languages. Probably we should check it out and, you know, who knows, have a Hindi podcast ready.
I must talk about this. Samiran, this might be of interest to you because you're constantly talking about hackathons and boot camps and all of that to us. There is something called Machine Hack Generative AI that's also from India, and they run a lot of AI hackathons. Maybe you want to check them out because you're constantly talking about hackathons, and that may be of interest to you. And you, a special, I'm not going to tell you more about this, but you must check out their logo.
So on that, I thought I should, in the middle of all this, I came across this example. I was hearing something. So in this world of great stuff, you know, people do all kinds of stupid things also, ethically, unethical. So there was this, I think out of some university, there was this algorithm that came out, said that based on your voice and appearance or something, it can tell you whether you're gay or heterosexual. Okay, I mean, just let's not forget about how unethical that is. And it said it has 81% accuracy. Okay, so and then this was put to a professor, and the professor said, this is real garbage. I said, and they asked him why. He said, see, I can tell you today that without knowing anything, you can beat the AI algorithm. He said, how come? They said, see, in any population, 94% identify themselves as heterosexual. So in any case, you're 13% better than the algorithm already. So, you know, the people kind of do all kinds of rubbish things also, giving AI a bad name. But luckily for us, you know, I think there is a lot going on in India. I think there is work in logistics. I think Blackbuck is doing a lot of work in freight management and AI. I think Cropin is doing work in agriculture and yield management. I think that SignEasy and IDFi are doing work in, you know, ID and management. So, yeah, I think this whole focus on use case-based AI development has definitely paid dividends for us. Not going off doing building crazy algorithms with 81% accuracy. That's
ridiculous. I just hope that we will continue and India will continue to focus on creating and using AI for things which help people solve problems at large and not do ridiculous things and do, you know, how should I put it, do AI just for the sake of developing cutting it. Edge technology. So I hope we will be a little more sensible about it, because in one of our previous episodes, if you haven't already heard it, we've talked about the economics of AI, right? So while we are very excited about AI, you must go and listen to our episode on the economics of AI, because when we use AI for all the fun, wrong reasons, it may cost us a lot, something that we must be aware of. We've spoken about a lot of companies that we are excited about in the space of AI. And if you have some, feel free to drop us a line. We are reachable. If you find that there are specific, you know, startups that we should cover or we should talk about in our future episodes, write to us and we'll be happy to go through them, curate, and then bring a whole series of startups in AI. We've actually done quite a few episodes on AI, and I think this may be one of our last ones for now. This is a space that keeps us excited, and I'm sure that we will find new things to talk about in the AI space. But we thought that the last episode on Gen AI had to be about AI in India. And we hope you had a wonderful time listening to us. We had a wonderful time talking about everything that India is doing in the AI space, and look forward to seeing you guys soon. Look forward to speaking to you on a very, very exciting episode next week. And don't forget to listen to our shorts. This time, shorts are going to be even more fun. And I promise you, it's not going to be the Akela Banana that Samiran has created.
Join industry leaders for an exciting event unlike any other at Parker Seminars Las Vegas 2024. Attendees will hear from renowned speakers including ultra-distance cycler David Goggins, leadership expert Simon Sinek, and an author of Battle for Your Brain, Nita Farahani, among others. We'll have 12 unique tracks to choose from covering topics from beyond biohacking and chiropractic principles to clinical science and more. Go to parkerseminars.com and register today.